You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, this is Tim McMaster taking you around the American League East for MLB.com Extras. This week we start with the New York Yankees, a battle of two Japanese starters, a historic day as far as that goes. So we check in with MLB.com Yankees reporter Brian Hoke. And Brian, the Yankees salvaged one game of their series, avoiding the sweep on Sunday, thanks to a pretty good start as far as Masahiro Tanaka goes, going up against Hisashi Iwakuma. It was just the 12th time two Japanese pitchers have started against one another, so a bit of a historic event, and Tanaka get the best of his former teammate over in Japan. Was he excited about that matchup going into it and afterwards?
He seemed like it. He plays his cards pretty close to the vest, as I'm sure you know. Tries not to outwardly show a lot of emotion, but I think it meant something to him. This is the first time that two teammates from Japan have gone head-to-head, and Iwakuma's a guy that he looked up to. Iwakuma, he said, was the ace of the staff, and Tanaka came right out of high school, so he learned a lot from him, the idea of how to attack hitters, what to look for out there. So I think it was definitely meaningful for him, and he raised his game. He answered the call. I think even more than that, the Yankees needed a stopper. You didn't want to lose another game. They'd lost four straight. You didn't want to make it a fifth and then head in the off day and think about it. So I think that was important for Tanaka and the Yankees.
They've really struggled with runners in scoring position, really bad on the weekend. Friday 0-for-12, Saturday 0-for-12, Sunday 1-for-11, and that 1-for-11 was good enough to get the win. So I guess they should be thankful in a sense. But what is going on with this team? Because obviously it's a team with veteran batters who know how to come through with runners in scoring position. They just all seem to be in the same kind of funk.
Yeah, you never look as bad as you do when you're not getting runs in, because it's just, it's so frustrating. You get those guys in scoring position at second or third base, and you pop it up or you strike out and you can't get them home. So it's the ebb and flow of the season to me. I find it hard to get too worked up 10, 11, 12 games into the season. I think it, these are guys, you look at the back of their baseball cards, they're going to hit. They have proven track records, as you talked about. But, yeah, it's frustrating. I think that the frustration is getting through to a lot of guys. And A-Rod made a funny comment in his locker when he hit the home run. There was a runner at first base, and he said, thank God that he wasn't standing at second, because I wouldn't have gotten him in. So I don't know. Who can really tell why teams struggle with runners in scoring position? You just know it affects every team at some point during the course of the season. Obviously, I think the Yankee fans get frustrated because they obviously watch this team more than they do any other team, and it seems like they're always struggling with runners in scoring position. But I really do think it affects almost every team during the course of the season. So maybe they show signs of breaking out of that, and then all you can really do is keep going up there and keep swinging the bat.
You mentioned A-Rod, and he came through with the big homer in the second. He was dropped in the batting order by Joe Girardi to the second half of that order, which immediately makes Girardi look like a genius. Did that allow A-Rod to take a little pressure off, or is this a sheer coincidence that the moment he's moved back in the order, he hits a home run?
I think it helps that you get a mid-80s fastball down the middle, basically. That's what A-Rod has made his living on. So, I mean, maybe it does give you some kind of subconscious relax a little bit. He said that he got good advice from Girardi before the game, basically stopped trying to choke the sawdust out of the handle of the bat. 0-for-19, though, that tells you something. It's the third longest drought of Alex's career. I think that any time you got a guy who's 40, 41, 42 years old, the questions are going to start coming. Is he done? We were asking those questions last year in April about Carlos Beltran, and since May 1st, he's been one of the best hitters on the team. So I think that it's still in there. I wouldn't say concerned, but if I were the Yankees, I would take note of the fact that when Alex has been getting fastballs down the middle, and we're talking 93 and up, he's been swinging and missing at that. That's something he only did about 25% of the time last year. It's been over 50% this year. So it's something to watch. But it is April, and I would refrain from hitting the panic button so soon.
I think this is what we've seen from Alex this year so far, is kind of what I think fans expected to see from him last year coming back from the year away. But then he kind of surprised everyone with the big year he had. So maybe we give him the benefit of the doubt right now, at least. The Yankees made a move this week. They sent Tyler Olson to AAA. They recalled Brandon Pinder. Olson had only been up briefly. They're kind of juggling relievers, it seems like. Are they just trying to get more bodies up there to have fresh arms?
It was only a matter of time. I mean, this is a team that has used a ton of pitchers over the last few years. The Scranton shuttle is in full effect. So, yeah, they got Tyler Olson up. He got in the game, sent him right back out. Pinder's a guy, he's an interesting guy. I kind of had Pinder penciled in to make the team in spring training. The numbers weren't bad. I still really haven't gotten a concrete explanation other than that they had other guys that they wanted to put on the roster. I thought Pinder had a very good chance of making the team out of spring training. He's a big-body, hard-throwing guy. It's the kind of guy that Brian Cashman likes a lot. Basically, just country hardball. What you see is what you get out of this guy. So I don't think he's here to stay for the whole season, but there's very few guys in that bullpen that I feel comfortable saying that about. And obviously, you want to talk about the big three at the back end and Jason Shreve. Yeah, I think those guys, they can get settled in their locker for a little bit. But everybody else, I feel like, could be shuttled in and out. So it's something the Yankees have taken advantage of. The Pennsylvania farm team's only, what, an hour and a half away? So they can get guys there pretty quickly if they need to. So it's something they're not afraid to do.
Speaking of that, the big three or the big two right now at the back end of that bullpen, you talk about dominance. Dylan Betances right now, 8 straight strikeouts over 3 games. That's absolute dominance. Is this as good as you've seen him? I know he was great last year and the year before, but to be this dominant as far as the strikeouts go?
Hey, I mean, it's amazing. Yeah, and I don't expect that he's going to continue to strike out the majority of everybody faces for the rest of the year, but who knows? Maybe he will. You know, Andrew Miller was saying the other day that as good as Miller has been, Betances just sets the bar so high that there's no point in even competing with him. And we were asking if there was kind of a friendly back and forth with him. If Dylan comes in and strikes out the side, does Miller try to do the same? I think you'd like to, but I really do believe Miller when he says there's no keeping up with that guy. It's amazing the value that the Yankees are getting out of that contract. He's only paid, I think it's about $507,000 for this year, which is a bargain. He'll be the 8th inning guy until Chapman comes back, and then he'll push back to the 7th. And this bullpen could be really like none we've ever seen in the majors before. Obviously, they've all got to stay healthy. The fact that Miller is pitching with a broken wrist on his glove hand, that's a big deal. Or not a big deal, but it would have been a big deal if it was the other way. So they've gotten lucky on that. If they can continue to get lucky and keep Betances, Miller, and Chapman together, I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch what those guys can do, and not a whole lot of fun for the other team.
Hey, everyone, Tim McMaster here along with our MLB.com Blue Jays reporter, Gregor Chisholm. And, Gregor, Patriots Day in Boston, always a festive time in Beantown, and the Blue Jays were able to spoil the fun as far as the Red Sox are concerned by going in there, and after being shut down for most of the game, they rally late against the Red Sox bullpen that is supposed to be a strength this season. But a nice job by Toronto late in the game, despite not having an extra base hit, as they see a streak of 87 games come to an end without an extra base hit. And of all places to see that happen with this lineup, Fenway Park. That's the one thing that I think stands out to me more than anything, is that this team played 9 innings at Fenway Park and didn't manage to hit the Green Monster.
Yeah, it's remarkable. And in a lot of ways, it's kind of a sign of what the Jays have been going through this season. The bats still haven't quite produced the way that they've thought. But this is a situation where the Blue Jays, the way they've been playing, could have buried themselves in the first, 2.5 weeks of the season. But for the most part, they've been able to survive. They've been playing around 500 ball, which is what they, kind of need to do with so many games against the AL East. If they're not going to jump out in front of the pack, they need to make sure that they don't get buried too deep. And that's what they've been doing against a lot of their rivals. And that's what we saw with the split down in Boston.
Yeah, and we've seen some guys playing well, some guys struggling, but let's take a minute to praise what Aaron Sanchez has done, because he has been tremendous. He won on Saturday. He's 1-0, 1.35 ERA, 20 innings, 20 strikeouts, and 7 walks. And obviously the issue with him, if he's going to struggle, is the command. Are you okay with 7 walks and 20 innings?
It's a little bit high for him. There's no question about that. He'd like to cut that down, and I think he will over time. But if the rest of his performance is going to be as dominating as it is, you'll take the walks at this point in time. You would like to see that number go down just a touch. But if there's one main positive that the Blue Jays can take out of the first start to the season, it's definitely Aaron Sanchez. And the rotation in general, but especially Aaron Sanchez, because it's sometimes hard to read into results in spring training, but Sanchez dominated throughout the spring, said he was ready, said he wanted to start. He's been proving it so far in his first couple of outings of the season. He's just been that good and really has been an early savior to that rotation and showing a lot of the frontline potential that everyone knew was in there.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about him winning the fifth starter job, but so far he's been pitching like a one or a two, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's kind of what the talk was all along. I mean, you know, even though he was competing for that fifth spot, the potential was always so much higher than that. And you know, once he wins a job, it doesn't matter where he's slotted, as long as he's taking the ball every fifth day. And really, he's been exceeding expectations so far. The Blue Jays just have to hope that continues for as long as possible. And it could, because he is that good of a pitcher. It's just a matter of him trying to put it together now over a prolonged period of time.
The continuing saga of the Blue Jays' leadoff role continues to change, and Kevin Pillar now out. It looks like Michael Saunders is going to get that chance. 1-for-4, an RBI and a walk, so he was on a couple times in the first try at it. Do you like Saunders in that role?
I do like it better than Pillar, and there's a few reasons for that. One, I think Saunders, when it's all said and done, is going to get on base more than Pillar. I know Saunders doesn't have a great career on base percentage, but it's something that he's shown flashes of in the past. He did have one solid year in Seattle with a high on base percentage, and I think he's more suited to getting on base regularly than Pillar. And the other side of it that I like is I do like Kevin Pillar hitting near the bottom of that curve, because it does free him up to do a few other different things as well, and that's to try and manufacture some runs. And that's something he can't really do at the top of a Blue Jays lineup. They've had some issues with that. In the past, you remember last year, Ben Revere was unfortunately a guy who couldn't run quite as much as he wanted to. And Pillar is a little bit in that boat as well, where he can't necessarily run with the type of reckless abandon that you kind of like him to. And he can do that when a guy like Ryan Goins is hitting behind him in the lineup. Probably can't do that when guys like Josh Donaldson, Jose Bautista are.
Tough start to the week for this team, as they've gotten some great pitching performances, but nothing to show for it, and now a pitcher going to the disabled list on top of all that. But let's start with Patriots Day, obviously a special day in Boston, the marathon, the Red Sox playing in the morning, and for much of the game, it looked like everything was going as planned. Clay Buchholz pitched great throughout, but then late in the game with just a 1-0 lead, it slips away with the bullpen. Koji struggled, and then Kimbrel struggles behind him. It's been interesting because we've seen Craig Kimbrel dominate with this team, and we've also seen some pretty tough outings by him. What's gone wrong when he hasn't been right?
Yeah, you know, Kimbrel, I wouldn't be too worked up about. He missed location a couple times. I mean, that situation on Patriots Day, you know, that game was more on Koji than it was on Kimbrel. I mean, Kimbrel came into a really tough situation in mid-inning with nobody out. It's just not the situation that he's accustomed to coming into. He's probably putting a little pressure on himself to get the strikeouts he needed to there. You know, the next day he looked fine. He's looked great. He looked great on Saturday. So I'm not worried about Kimbrel at all. I think the Koji Uehara situation bears watching a little closer, because, look, Koji Uehara is 41 years old, and he pitched, I think it was 8 times in the first 12 games of the season. That was probably more than they wanted him to pitch. They probably asked him to do a little too much, and I think they paid for it Monday when he just could not get the job done. So I think this magnifies really how big of a loss Carson Smith was for this team going on the DL to start the season, because they really need Carson Smith to take the load off of Koji and Tozawa, so those guys aren't pitching too often.
And they get more good pitching on Tuesday, but not from the starter, because Joe Kelly has to leave the game after just 2/3 of an inning. It's a right shoulder impingement. He's actually headed to the 15-day disabled list, which has led to kind of a slew of roster moves today. But let's start by talking about the job that the bullpen did for much of the game, because Heath Embry came in 3 1/3 innings, 2 hits, no runs. He was great. Tozawa came in, was great. Robbie Ross was good. You said it. Kimbrel was good. They end up losing it late, but this you can't put on a bullpen that was great for most of the game. The offense needs to come through in a big spot as well.
Yeah, I think what you have right now with the offense is you just have a few key guys who are struggling at once, where you have Mookie Betts is really the igniter of that offense. He's been ice cold lately. Xander Bogaerts, kind of a notoriously slow starter, not surprising for a guy who grew up on the beaches of Aruba. So I think once you get a couple of these guys going, once you get Pedroia maybe hitting for some more extra base hits, then you'll see starts to see this offense go a little bit more. I'm not real worried about them offensively. I think it just gets magnified during a three-game losing streak. And kind of like at times early last year, the Red Sox aren't putting it together right now. You know what I mean, Tim? It's like when they get good hitting, they're not getting good pitching. When they get getting good pitching, they're not getting the hitting. And when they do have good starting pitching and hitting, you know, that's the day the bullpen seems to let them down. So it's just not clicking in all facets right now. Like they really need to be playing winning baseball. But it's still very early. This start wouldn't be nearly as magnified if it wasn't for what took place the last two seasons. But when you finish in last place at back-to-back seasons, and you're the Boston Red Sox, and you added David Price and Craig Kimbrell to your team, there's going to be every game is going to be really scrutinized early in the season. So this is just a bad time for them to get off to a 6-7 start. They've had a couple three-game losing streaks within the last week or so here.
Yeah, and 6-7 not the end of the world by any, you know, standpoint. That's not terrible at all in baseball. You go on a little run, suddenly you have a great record. I mentioned the slew of roster moves with Kelly going on the DL. They also optioned Marco Hernandez to Pawtucket because they need some arms after all the bullpen work. So Noe Ramirez comes back up from AAA, as does William Cuevas. Are they going to have to juggle some pitchers between Pawtucket and Boston here for a little bit to get these innings worked out?
Yeah, and first of all, I found it interesting that they, they sent out Hernandez instead of Heath Hembree because, Hembree obviously is not going to be able to pitch tonight because of the 3 1/3 last night. So I guess it just shows, he kind of earned his keep, with the way he pitched last night. So they want to keep him around for a little bit. One of these pitchers is only going to be here for a few more days because they're going to need a starting pitcher on Sunday to replace Joe Kelly. So whether that's Henry Owens or whether that's Roenis Ilias or whether that's Brian Johnson, they're going to need somebody to pitch on Sunday. So that's it. But, yeah, they do need kind of a surplus of arms right now. I think they're okay position player-wise. They have, obviously the ever-versatile Brock Holt, who's kind of like two players at once, the way he can move all over the field. Travis Shaw can also play a couple different positions. So I think they're covered on the bench, and they really do, with some of the abbreviated starts they've gotten, they really do need some length out of their bullpen.
Eduardo Rodriguez also making some progress, I guess. Ian, what's the latest on him? Because he's throwing, I think, ready to make rehab starts.
Yeah, well, that was the thing, is they thought that after his last one on Sunday, I think it was, either Sunday or Monday, they thought he was going to go off to an affiliate after that. But then John Farrell said yesterday that he's still going to get one more extended spring training start. And the way John said it was not because of the arm, and that's in perfect shape. It's just because he's still having trouble with some of the agility stuff, and they can manage that a little easier in extended spring, have him do some agility drills and things like that, just to get him completely confident off that knee before he comes back. So, it's dragging on a little bit. I think we're looking at about hopefully there's still a second week of May maybe that he comes back and pitches for the Red Sox. But, yeah, they sure need this guy. But, they need him healthy. It doesn't do any good to rush him back too early.
Yeah, and with Joe Kelly down now, obviously more need for him, although maybe Kelly will be back before Rodriguez is, being on the 15-day DL. We'll see. We got to talk a little bit about Pablo Sandoval, Ian, and this weird situation that just seems to get a little weirder by the day. Obviously on the disabled list with the shoulder injury that we don't really know exactly what it is, and he was supposed to get the second opinion with James Andrews, but then it was too sore, which I'm not sure anybody knows what that means, too sore to get the second MRI. It seems like a surreal situation, and somebody just needs to kind of step in and explain what's going on. But obviously the Red Sox aren't going to be the team, the group to do that. When are we going to exactly know what's going on with Pablo?
Yeah, I would say, not for probably a couple more weeks now. He did go there with Andrews, and he got the cortisone shot. They said that he didn't have enough range of motion to be able to do a real good exam. I mean, John Farrell did say that the Red Sox also had a hard time in their MRI just because he had such little range of motion with the shoulder. But, it's a real mystery how this happened in the first place. I mean, the guy was barely playing. So you wonder, was he, did he just overdo it on the in the batting cage or in the weight room or something just because he was frustrated that he wasn't playing a lot of – something just doesn't sit right with this injury. It's kind of shrouded in mystery a little bit. I don't exactly quite know still what happened, but I think hopefully you can see Andrews in a couple weeks and then get that other opinion and then see where we're going here. But it sure doesn't seem like he's going to be playing baseball again anytime soon.
Bill, the Rays, pretty good weekend. They take 2 of 3 from the White Sox. They only allowed 5 runs in the series. And really, it's a series that could have easily been a sweep, except for Chris Sale on Friday night was just Chris Sale, and they couldn't do anything against him. But overall, when you look at the weekend, it seems like this Rays team starting to head in the right direction. And on Sunday, Matt Moore comes through 6 1/3 innings. He strikes out 10. He allows just 2 earned runs. An important thing, he didn't walk a batter. How far has Matt Moore come right now as opposed to when he first came back from Tommy John last summer?
Well, I think it comes down to his command is there now, and he's putting the ball where he wants to. But on top of that, he's very confident now. And, you know, when he first came back last year, he wasn't quite sure how his, you know, after Tommy John, I'm sure a lot of questions go through a pitcher's mind, you know, if I can come back physically, if I can be as sharp with control. It looks like he's got all of that now. So that was a big thing for the Rays having that on Sunday. But also I think you can't discount the fact that here they were in a little bit of a slide, and then Chris Sale, you know, just dominates them Friday night, and then they come back and win 2. I think that says a little bit something. Maybe it's a little bit of an early show of character for this team.
Yeah, definitely. And they got the pitching not just on Sunday with Matt Moore, but Erasmo Ramirez on Saturday. First starter to pick up a win this season for the Rays, which is kind of surprising, but also surprising that it would come from Ramirez. But a nice job by a guy who had obviously been pitching out of the bullpen, but for him to go 5 2/3 scoreless, allowed just 3 hits. And he did all that, and he only used 66 pitches, which was kind of key, Bill, right? Because he's working his way back to that starter stamina. To be able to get through 5 2/3 innings on 66 pitches was a big lift for this team.
Yeah, and how ironic was that? This was the odd man out of their 5-man rotation. You know, they've been going 4 the whole time. So, and here he gets a spot start, and he becomes the first guy to pick up a win. So it shows how deep the starting pitching is. And I do think that the starting staff not having a win until then was kind of an aberration. I mean, they faced a lot of really good pitchers, and the offense really hadn't been doing a lot for them. So there were a couple of bad outings, but, on the whole, the pitching's been pretty solid.
Right. Yeah, it certainly has. Now, we talked last week, I think it was, and you said still weren't really sure exactly where the Rays might end up going as far as that fifth starter goes, but does the performance that Ramirez put in there and in a spot start at this point kind of take a big step towards him being that fifth guy?
Well, it sure didn't hurt him. I mean, but, you know, basically what you're talking about is – you know, if Cobb is ready in late July or early August, you know, who's going to be the guy out? And already Ramirez has shown well out of the bullpen and as a spot starter. But, I do think what he showed Saturday, you know, will go a long way to saying, you know, hey, maybe we need to plug him in until Cobb is here. So, he's right now he's looking like a really valuable pitcher for the Rays.
You mentioned the offense and how it hasn't always been there so far this season, despite some pretty good starting pitching. They got a big lift from Brandon Guyer over the weekend. He's actually right now obviously limited at-bats, 17 at-bats, but he's leading the team in batting average, .353. Because he's a platoon guy here against lefties, but the way he's been swinging the bat, is there a possibility that he sees some more time against right-handed pitching?
Oh, I would definitely think so. I don't think there's anything locked in on the way they have to go. So I do think if you see a guy who's swinging it well, they're going to find a way to keep him in there. So, and it's just like, I had some people asking me about what was going to happen when they're playing in National League parks with Corey Dickerson. And I said, you know, he'll play DH most of the time, but if he's in National League park and he's swinging it well, you know, they're going to put him in the field. So I think right now, you know, Guyer swinging a hot bat, yeah, you probably could see him against some right-handers.
Yeah, and good point with Dickerson, because when you're in the National League park, you can't just – when you're a team that already needs to kind of get some pop from everybody in that lineup, you can't afford to suddenly take a valuable guy out of there. So I would agree with you on that. Now, as far as guys that are struggling, Logan Morrison continues to just kind of be ice cold. His average on the season, .063. Obviously, this wasn't the idea when the Rays brought him in, and obviously it's still very early, but when you look at Morrison at the plate, is there anything that people should be concerned about more than just being a slow start?
I think it's just a slow start. He and Miller both. And it's unfortunate when you're the new player. You'd rather have that slump after you got a few knocks in the books. But, he seems to be, confident. He doesn't seem to be down about it. He's played long enough to know that hitters are going to go through spells. And, I think we'll probably see something good from him before too long here.
Yeah, he's been too good a hitter throughout his career to continue to hit the way he has so far this season. The other guy I wanted to bring up to you, and you mentioned the pitching being good and running into some tough pitchers, and to a degree that I think has been the case with Chris Archer. But Chris Archer, now the ace of the staff, is 0-3, the ERA pushing 6, and he's only gone 15 and a third innings total. I guess the question is, what's up with Archer? Is it just kind of working things out, or is there something there that he really needs to correct?
Well, I think there's a lot of things kind of making for this perfect storm. Again, they faced a lot of really good pitchers. I tell you what, seeing Cleveland come in last week, I was very impressed with the group they threw, Kluber, Carrasco, and Salazar. And, he's out there competing. I think the one thing they keep talking about, he's a little bit, trying to think, the second team they played of Baltimore did a real nice job of not chasing out of the zone. And when they're not chasing his slider out of the zone, that puts a lot more pressure on a pitcher of his caliber. But all of that's set up by fastball command. And if he's getting this, putting the fastball where he wants to, that's going to make the slider look like the fastball, and then they're going to chase it, and he's going to have better results. So I think he knows that. And he doesn't seem panicked. The one thing I did think was stand up of him. He wanted to tell his teammates. He said, "I just hope my teammates know that I'm out there trying to compete as hard as I can."
Yeah, I don't think he has to worry about that. I'm pretty sure his teammates know exactly what kind of pitcher he is, and I think what kind of pitcher he'll end up being most of this season. Brittany, obviously the Orioles get off to the tremendous start. Things evened out a little bit this week as they go 3-3 with the rainout tossed in on Sunday. But the team's still hitting, which is obviously good news, and they really hit the ball on Friday night. One guy, when you look at this team, that hasn't hit so far is Pedro Alvarez. Obviously coming over late in the game as far as signing with the team, late in spring training. So far, the number's not there. He's historically a slow starter, but it sounds like the team's pretty confident that at some point here, Pedro's going to get things going.
I think that they are. If you look at this whole lineup, everyone's really clicking right now. Manager Buck Showalter likes to say there's going to be a time when some of these guys aren't clicking, and that's when they're going to need Pedro Alvarez. I think we can all agree that the lineup and the offense has really been the least of the Orioles' concerns here over the first 2 weeks or so. So they do think Alvarez is going to get going. He's too good of a hitter, has a really good track record to not get things going. I think what's really going to help him is the fact that he's not the guy here like he was in Pittsburgh. He's not relied on every night. And hopefully that will kind of change his approach, take some pressure off of him a little bit, just to start getting on base a little bit more consistency. I think that a lot of times, once you get on base a few times, really can help open things up. And he's putting in a lot of work, a lot of extra work. I'm sure he's pressing, really wants to make a good impression on a new team. But they're not overly concerned about it right now.
He's also in a situation now where he hasn't been playing in the field. He's been DHing, and he comes from the National League where he was always in the field. Do you think that sort of adjustment is maybe a factor as well? Because, it is a big deal just kind of – I know they don't just sit around waiting for the at-bat, but not being out there and part of the game in the other half innings.
A little bit, but I think if, for a guy like that, it might help because he's focused on hitting, but – maybe he's trying to do too much in between innings. I'm not really sure. I think it's a little bit of an adjustment, but I don't think it's anything that really you can say, well, maybe he's just not a good DH. That's what he's supposed to be for them. They didn't really have another plan in mind. He could play the field a little bit at some point, but he's going to have to get used to that role.
Yeah, and hopefully that's something that comes with time and the adjustments and everything, like you said. You mentioned how this team's really clicking, and 23 home runs, that I think equals out to 2.1 per game right now. Obviously, if that continued, this team would set all sorts of records. But while it's going on, you know, what's the attitude of this team? Just keep it going and just kind of ride the wave?
During the win streak, you mean?
During the whole, just the power surge they've had all season long.
Yeah, I think nobody really wants to talk about it too much because they're hoping that it can continue. I think we all knew that they were going to hit a lot of home runs. What I'm most surprised about is the fact that they're not just solo shots. They're getting on base, they're walking, they're driving guys in. And to me, that's what makes that lineup even scarier, Tim. You know, they're not just capable of the home run or strikeout, which I think a lot of people, including myself, are kind of worried that they're very one-dimensional. They're showing early on that ability to really work the count. And, yeah, they don't really want to talk too much about how well they've done offensively over these first 2 weeks or so. It's been really, really impressive to see, especially because they've gone to a lot of cold weather places where the ball's not necessarily flying off the bat right now. How is this team going to be in June and July? You know, it has the potential to be really scary.
Mike Wright has been in a tough situation early in the season in that he has had two starts rained out. And I know the first time he had a start rained out, they actually ended up skipping him, going back to Chris Tillman. This time around, he will get to start on Tuesday, his second start of the year. He's a guy that obviously thrived when he was put in the bullpen late last year. How tough a situation is this for him, where he's getting spot starts, but you know the plan is eventually that he'll find his way back to that bullpen? Is that a tough challenge mentally for a guy like Mike Wright?
I think so, and I don't think that they're resigned to eventually putting him back in that bullpen either. Yeah. I mean, there's still a spot for Kevin Gausman. If Mike Wright is a fourth starter, they still don't really have that fifth guy, you know, locked up. So I think it's really been a challenge because he's trying to prove himself, not a rookie anymore, really trying to learn from, not really in his rookie season is what I mean, trying to learn from the mistakes he made last year and just can't get into that consistent groove. And we all know that pitchers are such a creature of habit in baseball, and I think it's been really difficult. He had 14 days off in between his last start, so that was really tough. And I think that the rain out yesterday and the fact that he hasn't been able to, again, get in that rhythm has been really difficult because he's trying to show the Orioles what he can do, trying to prove that he belongs in this rotation. And you never want to use those things as excuses, but it certainly makes it more difficult.